Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
How's your week?
Not too bad. You?
I'm knackered. My insomnia's back.
Oh, no.
I don't know if you've ever suffered. I don't know if it is officially insomnia. I'm self-diagnosing here. But I'm just not sleeping well. And I can go. Last week, I went through about three nights where I barely got any sleep. And I'm trying all kinds of things, all kinds of ideas. I've spoken to a lot of people. They say, oh, have you tried listening to sea sounds? And I love the sound of the sea. So I've tried that. Nothing.
I was going to suggest
classical music.
Something that I found has been quite... It's going to sound strange. Something that I found has worked for me. Brown noise or white noise.
Oh, yes. Just
there is also pink noise, but I'm not entirely sure what that is. I think it's just at a different pitch. But it just sounds like an annoyance at first, but then you kind of get used to it and it's like settling.
Is it?
Yeah. And I used to hear the same sort of thing with Wayne Rooney. He used to allegedly...
Well, you just have him on in the background.
Chatting away.
Eef.
He used to have trouble sleeping. So apparently, the legend has it, and I don't know if this is true, he'd put the vacuum cleaner on.
Oh, but that would just annoy me, having just a vacuum cleaner on.
Permanent noise, just as a sort of constant to help him sleep.
My neighbour uses a vacuum cleaner very late at night sometimes.
How late?
Oh, like 11:30, 12:00.
Oh, that's not on.
I hear her rattling up the stairs. And I mean, she's probably a very busy lady, but sometimes I think, come on, who's hoovering at this time of night?
No, that's not on. You've got to have a bit of manners and respect for your neighbours. You can't be blasting the hoover at... Oh, speaking of which... Sorry, I'm going all over the shop today. I'm going from Wayne Rooney to Tyson Fury. I had the Tyson Fury fight on the other night. I was very excited.
Yeah.
And I blasted the volume. I put the subwoofer on. Oh. I was singing to Sweet Caroline.
What time of night was this?
10 p.m. on a Saturday night.
Okay.
And Mrs. Ben came in from the patio and said, you might want to turn that down a wee bit because I can hear it outside, so I'm fairly sure the neighbours can hear it pretty loudly.
Yeah.
And my response was, I don't care if this is selfish. I want to enjoy this fight. I've paid a lot of money for this pay-per-view. Yeah. It's going to be no more than 45 minutes of a bit of noise at 10 p.m. on a Saturday night. I think that's reasonable. Well, am I wrong?
Well, I think it depends. It depends. I think it depends on the neighbour's situation. Is your neighbour elderly?
No.
Do they have young children?
Yes, too.
How young?
I don't know exactly. I would say one of them is probably... I don't know. Let's say both under 10.
Under 10. You see, now I'm beginning...
One of them possibly under 5.
Now I'm beginning to fall on Mrs. Ben's side because I think you've got to take into consideration the children next door. They'll be in bed. They'll be trying to sleep. They don't want to hear you belting out Sweet Caroline waking them up. I mean, that's like a nightmare hearing you singing Sweet Caroline. Those poor kids probably traumatised.
Okay, listen. Here's my reasoning. Mm. It's a one-off special event. I'm not doing this every night. I'm not setting off fireworks outside on a daily basis. I'm just enjoying a rarity in the calendar, a Tyson Fury fight. It is possibly his retirement fight. Just let me enjoy it. 45 minutes. The neighbour's making a bit of racket. Let him enjoy himself.
Well, my question is, has the neighbour complained?
No, they're very nice people. They probably wouldn't.
So they're probably just really quietly seething at the loud neighbour. But no, I think if they haven't complained, it's fine. You know, had they come and said... No, the question is, had they come and said something? Had there been a knock on the door? Excuse me, look, my children are trying to sleep and all we can hear is your... I want to call it singing, but I'm not quite sure what it is. It's just a noise. It's like a woman being murdered in the most horrific fashion. Would you mind turning it down? Would you say, oh, no, it's a one-off event. It's his last fight. It's Tyson Fury. I'm not letting off fireworks every night.
Hang on a minute. Why am I drunk in your impression? I don't like this very much.
I'm just imagining you were.
The beer was flowing. I won't lie. It was a fight.
And that wasn't necessarily a drunken impression of you.
It sounded very drunk.
That was just...
Well, no, I'm not going to do that.
It was more because of petulant child Ben that I was impersonating.
If the neighbours had knocked on the door, I would have been very apologetic and, of course, instantly turned it down. But then I'd have been sat there on the sofa for the rest of the evening sulking with my arms crossed, seething that I'd been told off in the middle of my very expensive pay-per-view.
The thing is, I wouldn't ever... I've never complained to a neighbour I've very rarely had neighbours I've needed to complain about. I did have a neighbour once who, very good actually, because he did knock on the door and said, look, we're going to be having a party tonight, so there might be quite a bit of noise. What I didn't bank on was it being an all-nighter.
Right.
But it had never happened before and it never happened again. So I kind of, but I must admit, by about 5 in the morning, I was thinking, just turn the music down. Who can still be dancing at this time in the morning? You must be knackered. Just go home.
I must admit, not where I live now, but the previous address I lived at, the neighbours would occasionally very sweetly knock on the door and say, listen, just to give you advance warning, sorry, but we're going to be having a big party and it's going to be a late one. So I'm thinking, all right, midnight, okay, 1 o'clock, possibly. Yeah. By 5 in the morning, it was still going on. But because they'd had the good grace to come and give us the heads up, it sort of disarms you from being able to go and shout at them. And once they even did bring us some lovely jerk chicken, which was one of the nicest things I've ever eaten. So
this neighbor really did invite me to the party. He did say, if you want to pop in. But I thought, I don't really know you, and I think that'd be a bit weird if I turned up. I mean, there's a bit of me thinking, shall I? Let's just turn their face as I turn up at the door. And be like, oh, we didn't mean it. That was just manners to invite you. We don't want you here bringing the party down, because you'd be the one going, can we just turn it down just a little bit? Because I'm a bit like that in pubs now. I don't want to be in a pub with loud music anymore. I want a quiet pub. I find now that noise, as you know, noise has always irritated me more than ever, but it does something physical to me. It makes me kind of recoil. If I hear anything, it starts to hurt my ears. And I was in a pub, this is going back a bit, just before the lockdown, actually, I was in a pub. And I don't know who turned the jukebox up, and I was sitting right by the speaker, and I was furious. I was absolutely furious. And I said to I knew the person behind the bar quite well. I said, can we just turn it down a little bit? Because it's just so loud. And it's like, you know, it's a pub, mate. It's like, I know, but do you want me to stay here? Because I'm not staying here. If this is the din that's going to be created for the next few hours.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can go into a pub and tell them to turn it down. but if you consider where I'm coming from, I think you're being a bit harsh, because if you consider a boxing match is 12 3-minute rounds, so 45 minutes of actual action that I'm going to be getting excited for and shouting at, potentially. And of course, it rarely goes the full 12.
Yeah.
A football match is literally double the full potential of a boxing match, 90 minutes. And can you imagine if during the height of the World Cup, when England were doing really well, I came round and knocked on your door and said, all right, mate, keep it down. Come on, I'm trying to relax next door. Shush.
I mean, I'd feel awful that I'd upset a neighbour. That would be my first thought. I wouldn't be thinking, oh, just go away, leave me alone. But I get your point. That
there wouldn't be a part of you that thought, oh, come on, it's the World Cup. Let me enjoy the football.
But of course, be a part of me thinking that, but I'd also feel terrible that a neighbour had felt the need to come and knock on my door and tell me to be quiet. Because I always think, like, when I'm somewhere that's not my house, and if things are a bit loud, I start to get a little bit just worried in case it's a bit too loud for their neighbours. I was once, this was a party that, I mean, my mate invited me to a party, and he said, you might want to get there about 9, half 9. I said, mate, that's the sort of time I'm starting to think coming home, 9:30. What do you mean get there 9:30? He went, oh, it's kind of a late all night thing. And I was like, oh, okay. So I got there about 9:30. I was the first one to arrive. No one else was there. And this party was going on. I think I left about 3 in the end.
Wow, that's late.
But it was going on all night, and it was in a block of flats. And there was a bit of me, I mean, I guess I cared a little bit less the more alcohol I took in.
Yeah.
But there was still a bit of me thinking, this seems very loud.
So going back to your insomnia, I think the solution is obvious. If you've tried all these different noises and you're not willing to try white or brown or pink noise, and you're not willing to
I'll give it a go.
If you're not willing to try Wayne Rooney's Hoover, then maybe me singing Sweet Caroline to you all night would send you off into a blissful sleep.
Oh, I don't know if that's going to send me off into it might send me off into a spate of madness. I mean, do you really go for it, I bet.
Of course you do. I mean, these things don't come around very often. You've really got to get into them and enjoy the spirit of it all.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the fight anyway.
I did.
And he's going to retire now. And then that's, he says, which means he won't. Of course, he'll be back for one last big money spinner at some point.
I've got a very small bet on with a mate, because my mate's very much of your opinion that there's no chance he's retiring. It's all rubbish. If, you know, he'll want another fight somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
But I've got a very small bet on it, because I believe him. I mean, he's got all the money in the world. He's got a perfect record. He doesn't want to keep getting punched in the face for a living.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you retire?
But they all do. I mean, even like they get to about 60 and they're like, yeah, I'm going to come back. I mean, it's like, just retire. You don't need to put yourself through this anymore. It's madness. George Foreman will be coming back. Do they have like some, do they do like senior boxing?
Yeah, Ricky Hatton's coming back out of nowhere.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
For a fight.
He's not even that old, is he?
He's old enough to be retired. I'll find out what age he is.
I mean, you know, are there people like in their 70s and 80s still going for it? Because imagine...
not in their 80s,
well,
Trev.
No, how do you know?
I mean, there's one false move and you're in the morgue, mate, at 80 in a boxing match.
No, you know, like they do like walking football for the elderly. Is there like a toned down, like touch boxing?
By the way, Ricky Hatton's 43.
Yeah, I mean, that's not old, is it? That's not senior. That's younger than me. That's the worst thing about that. He's retired and he's sort of coming back into the senior part and he's younger than me.
Well, Mike Tyson fought recently. I'm sure he's 60-odd at least.
Oh, he must be. Yeah, he must be. I'm trying to think. There must be a market for like 80-plus boxing now. I'm trying to think how you could...
You can't really do touch boxing, can you?
Well, I reckon you could. It depends. Like, if you get a touch on a certain bit of the body or the face, and that's a point thing, you'd have to have a smaller ring. I don't think you could have such a large space to move around in.
It would take ages to back someone into the corner, wouldn't it?
Well, you might need
simmering
room.
After.
Yeah,
them.
I was going to say, you might need room for the frames. I think it's a... Because even wrestlers, like, you're into your wrestling.
I mean,
some of them keep going on to their old... But as that's just acting, I suppose it's not really a... Yeah, as long as you can remember your lines, it's not a problem, is it?
You know how to wind me up.
Now, Ben, in the last week or so since we last recorded, there's been a lot of action in Westminster. There's been some fines issued to the Prime Minister and the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yes, there has.
Fixed penalty notices. I'm sure, as you can imagine, I've been stewing on all of this since we last recorded, because yes. I also think I'm not a conspiracy theorist, as you know.
But yes, you enjoy hearing them, but you're not one yourself.
But I do have my own little conspiracy theory, just a small one, because the day the fines were announced was, I think it was a Tuesday, but it was the Tuesday when Parliament was in recess for Easter. So it meant that he wasn't going to face Parliament for PMQs on the following Wednesday.
That's convenient.
Well, that's what I thought. And I know a week later he could come to Parliament and do his... But I just thought that's convenient, isn't it? It's like giving him a whole week or so to work out his arguments and then to train his pack of dogs to come out with their lines of... Oh, we're not swearing, are we? But his lines...
Careful.
His lines of brown nosing. And I just think, just... Go, man. Just go. What does it take for him to go?
Now,
he's now broken the law. Why don't they all just go?
I hate to put you on the spot, and I don't expect you to know the answer to this, but has there ever, and if so, who was the last, has there ever been an active serving prime minister of this country found to have broken the law?
No.
And not only that, the law they set.
I know.
Has that ever happened?
No, I don't believe it has. I think I'm right in saying that has never happened. This is the first Prime Minister to ever have received a fine for breaking the law.
Now, this is something that kind of annoys me, because I know where they're coming from. I think their motivations aren't necessarily quite that pure. But people who say, oh, shut up about it, it's just trivial.
Yeah.
Now, I kind of get it. Yeah, I mean, if we're arguing over if someone attended a party or not, that is a bit trivial. Mm. However, it's actually nothing to do with the party. It's the principles of the Prime Minister breaching the flipping law.
But it's more than that. It's what was happening around, not just in this country, what was happening around the world, where people couldn't go and say goodbye to loved ones and all of that stuff that people have said so many times. And they just don't seem to get it. They say they do, but they don't. And I don't understand it. And I've just been, I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg, the 19th century fop who pretends to be human. I don't really understand what he is.
Right? Pretends to be human and pretends to be intelligent as well.
Yes. Well, this is what I was going to say. What is it with these people that find themselves in positions of power? That I'm not suggesting they're not academic, but there's a difference between being academic and being intelligent. These people are thick. They are so thick.
The tragic thing is, I believe there is a certain demographic of people who believe that just because Jacob Rees-Mogg speaks with this silver spoon in his mouth the way he does, and he's very plummy and posh, there is a certain amount of people who think, oh, well, he clearly is intelligent. He clearly knows what he's talking about. I'll just bow to posh boy because he must know what he's talking about because he's got that accent. And it's just so untrue. Some of the plummiest people I've met in my life have been some of the thickest people.
I know. And he came up with his analogy about cricket. As he would.
Oh, I heard this gibberish, yes.
And he was like, oh, this is like going to the TV umpire in cricket and finding out whether, you know. And I was going, yes, but when the TV umpire gives the out decision, the batsman walks. That's what happens in cricket.
Oh, that's a great point, Trev.
But in your analogy, it's like, oh, he's seen that the umpire's given out, but he's still going to stay in. I mean, it's just the most ridiculous analogy.
And what his argument was basically, you can disagree with the umpire's verdict.
Yes.
Yes, you can, but you can't stay at the crease, can you?
No, that's the thing. Just go. Because I don't understand how anyone... And there are lots of his own people coming out against him, but I don't understand how anyone can defend him. I don't understand. Like, if you and I, as decent human beings, or I like to think we're decent human beings, if we found ourselves in this position, I would just go. I wouldn't carry on. And it's because he's always wanted to be Prime Minister. He's always wanted to be Winston Churchill, and he's not. He's nowhere near. Don't get me wrong. I would have disagreed with a lot of Winston Churchill's policies. I don't think Winston Churchill was a pleasant man in a lot of areas of his thinking.
No, I think he was a great wartime leader, but as an individual, I think he was far from perfect.
Yes. He wants to be that, and he's nowhere near it. And he's made such a horlicks of his dream of being Prime Minister that he's clinging on. I'm so angry about it. I was thinking, what? There's nothing I can do. You feel so powerless. I've said this before. You feel so powerless, and you just have a modicum of respect and dignity, and just go.
Now, if we're being fair, because I like to try and be a little bit fair, I did see a video clip recently of Boris Johnson where I thought, you know what, respect to you, good on you. Because
was this when he was in India sitting at a spinning wheel looking like a toddler?
No, it wasn't. there has been a rather disgusting story published in a Sunday newspaper about Angela Rayner, and it basically suggested that she'd done a Sharon Stone type move, Basic Instinct style, to distract Boris deliberately. Mm. And I saw Boris asked about it, and he said, basically, oh, it's disgusting. It's completely untrue. Rubbish. I've been on the phone to her to talk to her about it. We're all good. And I thought, you know what? Respect to him for that, at least. He's not...
Fair play, yeah.
He's clawing back some dignity from that, I think. That's... by the way, what the hell are that newspaper thinking printing that sort of crap?
Well, it's the paper it was printed on is that sort of paper. It's it's just the most vile thing. And the problem is because it's such a right-wing paper and they know that this right-wing government are in such trouble, they're now just turning to a character assassination. That's what they're trying to do. They're basically saying, we are in such trouble that all we can do is pick on the what we deem to be the easiest target on the opposition bench, which is such an archaic idea anyway, that the female politician is the weakest target. You know, if you're going to have a go at the opposition, have a go at the opposition leader. There's enough to have a go at him about. He looks like a Thunderbird's puppet. Start with that.
It's very satisfyingly, though, I think it's massively blown up in their face.
Of course it has.
Yes. Everyone has pointed out what a scummy thing it was to print that article.
And whoever leaked it as well, whoever that member of the party is that leaked it, I think he's going to find himself in a lot of hot water. So good. That's good.
So they look smarmy and disgusting and cheap.
Yeah.
And of course, as well, everyone sprang to, quite rightly, including Boris, sprang to Angela Rayner's defence and said, this is deplorable.
Yeah. This is the thing, right? So the world is a horrific place. And every day I just see more and more examples of the ridiculous nature of politics. And I don't know what else we can do. Because the thing about the politicians I see on the telly, this is what I mean about politicians being a bit stupid and this inability to look at the reality of what... I watch Question Time and I see... And the audience laughs at some of the answers that some of the panel give. And there was one recently where the politician was sort of trying to say something about the party, but sort of not saying it, you know, because basically they've been sent out with a party line. I mean, this is the thing. I just think we should get rid of this party line nonsense. Just tell us what you think. If you think the man's an idiot and made a mistake, say it. Just because he's your leader, this ridiculous notion that they've got these whips. I mean, what kind of archaic idea is this? You've got the whips going around going, if you dare vote against us, you know, it's like ridiculous. It's so outdated. We've just got to get rid of it all. And I think it was Victoria Derbyshire was hosting Question Time, and she said to him that they're laughing at you. They're ridiculing you. How do you feel about that? And she just sort of didn't know what to say. And you look at these people. Why do they send these people? There's a Labour guy called Peter Kyle. Why they send him out? He behaves like a child in the playground whenever I see him on the telly. I say, what are you doing? You're such an idiot. He behaves like a child. And then he brings everyone down to his level. So you get this childlike argument going on. You think, don't send them out. They're idiots. It does my head in bed.
It would be quite refreshing to see a politician who was just a bit more blunt and a bit less polished. Mm. And I know she got herself in a bit of bother by using the word scum recently.
Yes.
Angela Rayner. I mean, I'm not saying she wasn't right, but she got herself into a bit of bother with that. But I did at least admire her sort of passion and her honesty and her sort of down to earth. I've got a real soft spot for Angela Rayner.
I know you seem to be very defensive of her today, Ben. I don't know why. What's going to you? Have you got posters of her on your wall?
I might do soon.
I fair play to the Tory politicians who stood up in the House of Parliament and said, "You've got to go. You've got to go." I mean, good on them. I mean, they're not people that I would agree with, but on this occasion, I do. I think, well, at least you've got the bottle to stand.
Yeah, a bit of backbone. Yeah.
I mean, it was David Davis, who I'm not a fan of by any means, but this is weeks ago. He stood up and said, for God's sake, go. You know, and that's what I think a lot of the country are thinking, aren't they?
I think so, but I think, I don't know how this is going to end, really. The one thing I know for sure is he will never quit on his own volition.
No,
ever.
I don't think so. No, he's got to be ousted,
dragged out by his floppy hair, I think.
The other one is Michael Fabricant.
Now, I must admit, I've heard the name, but I couldn't tell you who that was if he'd slapped me in the face.
Really? Just while I'm telling you this story, if you haven't heard it, just look up his picture, just out of interest, because I think you would enjoy what you see.
Okay, I'm on it.
Michael Fabricant, he said something along the lines, oh, they're only doing what teachers and nurses were doing. They would go and have a drink in the staff room after a long day. No, they weren't. Not during COVID. teachers might have a drink in a staff room after work on a Friday. I've worked in schools. I know that happens. It certainly wasn't happening during COVID. And nurses, I did a lot of work in hospital, the hospital radio. And when we had a party, not even in the hospital, but in the offices next to it, you weren't allowed alcohol. No alcohol was allowed on hospital premises. So to suggest that nurses during COVID were sitting in a staff room having a booze up is the most ridiculous notion from this Boris wannabe. Have you seen his picture?
I'm trying to take the moral high ground on this one because I'm not an oil painting.
It's like Wurzel Gummidge gone wrong, isn't it?
It looks like there's been a fire at Madame Tussauds.
Sorry to have got very ranty and political, Ben. I try and stay clear of it on this podcast, but I needed to get that out of my system.
That's okay. We try and limit it so it's not every week, but, you know, once in a while,
it's fine. What people are talking about, and we try and reflect that. So that's it. Rant over. If you didn't enjoy it, I'm sorry.
Well, let me tell you something that happened to me this week.
Go on.
I got an email.
Oh, yes.
From our... now, some people who listen to this podcast may not be aware that we used to enjoy a flagship breakfast show on a London DAB station.
I mean, if you can call it flagship, when we had about 7 listeners, but yeah.
Shh! Don't tell people the truth.
It was more flag dinghy.
So, I got an email from our previous employer.
Did you?
I did, out of the blue. I didn't get one. No, I know. And the subject line of the email was payment letter.
Oh.
And I thought, aha, I knew they'd come crawling back one day. This this email's going to say, oh, Ben, we've made a ghastly, ghastly mistake. Please come back. We'll open envelope. Yeah. We'll pay you anything you want.
No, I think the day they got rid of us, they felt a total sense of relief that we were out the door.
So, to my horror, I read the email and basically found out that the radio station had received a letter from Transport for London. Now, remind me of the date we were sacked.
Well, I don't know. It was June or July 2019, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And remind me of the date now.
What is it?
April 2022.
Yeah.
Apparently, TFL... have issued a fine to me.
Have they?
Yeah.
For what?
For the they basically set up our old employer a system where we could drive in and out of the congestion charge, and they would very kindly foot the bill.
That's
because
right.
We were having to do such on social hours, you know, getting up at 3 in the morning to drive to London from where we live was a bit of a faff.
Yes.
But there was this auto renew system.
Oh, right.
Which had gone unpaid for a year because it was set up under the company address, but under my name.
Oh, right.
And this auto-renew thing had gone unpaid. And it had generated a whopping £20 fine.
£20.
Which Sadiq Khan, in his wisdom, Transport for London, have decided to redirect to a debt recovery company.
Brilliant.
I have then basically got on the phone to TFL, who are... we're not allowed to swear, I always do.
No, but just say they're useless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flipping useless. Gave me all the wrong advice. Long story
short... Of course
they
give you the wrong advice. I mean, could you remember I was on the phone once? We were driving home. I think it was the first time we had to try and circumnavigate the congestion zone.
Yes.
And we weren't sure whether we'd been in it or not because we got a little bit lost. So I paid the congestion charge. And when I looked on the thing, it also sort of suggested the day before. So I paid 2 days of congestion charge.
Yes, you did.
I need to find out what's the deal is here because I'm not sure we'd been in it the day before. So I phoned them up and they went, well, we've got no way of telling you whether you've been in the congestion zone or not. I thought, well, you must have, because had I not have paid, you would have been on to us about paying. So you must have a way of telling if people have been in the congestion zone or not. And I said, if I haven't been in the congestion zone but I've paid, what happens? How do I get it back? He went, oh, it's very difficult.
Yeah, you can't get it back.
Very unlikely you'd be able to get it back. It's a very long-winded situation to get it back. I thought, well, surely you should be telling me how easy it is to get it back. And in the end, it's like, oh, well, forget it then. If it's going to be that difficult, forget it, because I'm not going to be bothered to...
I may be misremembering this, but wasn't the cherry on that particular cake that they'd said... because I think you might have sort of got a bit annoyed and asked them, well, if I hadn't paid and been caught out, how would I have known? And then they said... Well, you'd have received a fine in the post.
That's it. So, yes, they are the most ludicrous and useless organisation in the world. But anyway, so you phoned them up.
Yeah, I phoned them up. They said, it's no longer in our control. You have to go to this debt recovery company.
Oh, my God.
And I let loose on them. And I said, well, I hope Sadiq Khan enjoys his £20. I hope it buys him half a can of white paint to paint some roads with. It infuriated me. And I said, well, hang on a minute. Is my case now closed with you? Because I don't want to have this auto-renew rubbish with you anymore.
Yes.
I don't think it was even set up under my card payment detail. So if they chased it up, I'm not sure where it would have gone. But
no.
And they said, oh, well, no, your auto-renew remains open until you've settled the debt, at which point you can then call us back and close it. I thought, well, that's really inconvenient. So then I called up the other people. I tried to reason with them that £20 for Transport for London for a job I left 3 years ago was a tad unreasonable, and surely you can just write this off as the obvious mistake that it is.
I don't think a debt recovery service is going to be reasonable.
No. I used to work for a debt recovery company. They tried to tell me that it was out of their control to terminate the debt. I don't believe that for £20. That's charlatans. So I coughed. Basically, after attempting to reason with these people, I let off a string of four-letter expletives.
Good, yeah.
Paid them their blood money, and then I got back on the phone to TFL after being assured they would be instantly told about the payment confirmation.
Yes.
Got on the phone to TFL, who had no confirmation that I'd made the payment, and I said, well, they told me your systems are linked and you'd be able to see it straight away.
Of course they're not linked, mate. Of course they're not. You're thinking the TFL is somehow in the 21st century.
And she said, oh, no, I don't know who told you that. That's not true at all.
Just lies all the time.
And I said, well, listen, I didn't want to pay this debt and still have this account open, so I'm calling back to cancel it because I don't want this problem to happen again in another 3 years. And then I said, now I've finally paid this thing. I know you don't believe me because you can't see confirmation, but can we now close my account? And she said, oh, no, the moment we passed your details onto the debt recovery company, we closed it automatically.
Oh.
I mean, if you could strangle someone through a phone line, I'd have gone for it. So I'm spitting feathers. What a TF. Are they that hard up? They're shaking down people 3 years later for 20
quid.
Well,
they are that hard up. They are that hard up. They've had to take a lot of money from the government to survive, haven't they? So, yes, they'll be clawing every penny they can because they're in a right old mess. But I mean, it's the utter incompetence that you have to deal with in everyday life that really wears you down. I find that people are incompetent. The older I get, the more I realise how useless we are as a as a living being. You look at all other animals and plants on the planet. So efficient.
Yeah.
So efficient in the way they work. And human beings, we are the most inefficient and the most incompetent things. We just are unable to do anything properly. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why. Is it that we've just, I think I've said this to you before, have we just pushed our abilities too far that we've evolved to this state where we have transport systems and we just can't really cope with that. We can't cope with this sort of everyday life. I think we're useless.
Well, yeah, I mean, two phone calls to two separate employees from the same department of the same company, Transport for Flipping London, and they gave me completely contradictory advice. If you had a bee's nest operating like this, it would fall apart.
Of course it would. My brother had this recently. He tested positive for COVID, right? And as it tells you should do, you should report if you've been, if you've tested positive. So he did that. And he was on the phone for such a long time. He said that basically the person was giving him all this information, which he knew was nonsense, because they said to him, you now have to self-isolate for, I think they said to him 10 days, when at the time the guidance was down to 7 or whatever it was. So they told him the wrong amount of time. He still lives with my parents. So they said to him, oh, now your parents have to self-isolate for 14 days. He was like, no, they don't. It's not the guidance at all. They're going, oh, no, it is. And then later on, he wanted to get hold of some tests. This was a few weeks ago when they were still free. So he tried to get some tests. He ended up phoning up someone else anyway. And the person on the end of the phone, I think he phoned up like the NHS helpline for COVID or something, and they were much more helpful. They said to him, oh no, no, your parents don't need to, unless they test positive, they can go about their business as normal. That's not a problem. I think you need to self-isolate for 7 days, and obviously your workplace will have their own guidance on when you can go back, so follow that. And you just think, well, why couldn't the first person, why is the first person giving you out-of-date information? Because, you know, that's like a government COVID hotline, and again, it's pure incompetence.
Well, I mean, if you're being charitable, and maybe I should be a bit more charitable to the chumps that work at TfL, they're maybe going off what they think is true. But if it's anything led by the blinking government, then you can probably assure it's all sorts of mess all over the place, and no one really knows what's going on anyway.
Well, I think any... just
We've slipped back into politics here.
Well, yeah, no... Before we finish up this week, Ben, do you remember a few weeks ago I was telling you about how on The Chase it really annoys me when someone says, oh, my friend will kill me if I don't get this because they're a fan of whatever.
Yeah.
And how that really annoyed me. And you said, oh, maybe we should make Trev's pet peeves a regular feature or an occasional feature.
Have you made a jingle for it?
I haven't made a jingle for it, no. But I've noticed a few more things. I just thought, I'm not necessarily going to make this a regular feature. These are things that, and all of mine that I'm going to tell you about are things on the telly that annoy me. And once I've noticed them, I can't get away from it being annoying when I keep hearing it.
Can I quickly, before you begin, interject and say, you doing this ruins lives.
Because everyone else is going to notice this and be annoyed by it.
You pointed out... Dara O'Brien's noise to me.
Yes.
And I can never unhear it now.
I know.
Dara O'Brien, the Irish comedian, has a habit, and he's very well aware of it himself. I've seen him talk about it, of after he'll do a punchline to a joke, he'll often go, and you pointed that out to me, and it ruined his comedy for me.
Sorry about that, but yeah, it started to bug me. And the thing is, I mean, we all do it. I mean, I have little tics that I know that I do while we're doing the podcast. I know I have them. And if people start picking up on it, then it must really annoy them. They go, oh, just stop doing that. I remember on the radio being told to stop saying, to be honest, because I used to say that a lot. And the boss said to me, can you stop saying, to be honest? Because you say it a lot. And I really had to work hard to try not to do that thing. But some of these things are just tics that we all have. But once you notice them, oh, it's really annoying. And a bit like the being told not to keep saying, to be honest. I think in some situations, I don't know if they're told that anyway. One thing that really has started to bug me when I'm watching any football on the telly and Gary Neville's doing the commentary or he's in the studio at half time. Have you noticed the amount of times he says at this moment in time? Oh, just stop saying it. Stop saying that. Like, every 2 minutes going at this moment in time. So shut up, say something different. But nobody's saying to him, Gary, what you're doing is brilliant. You're a great pundit, but can you stop saying at this moment in time? Because that's really irritating because you're saying it. I mean, if you were doing a drinking game, you'd be hammered by 10 minutes in.
But, I mean, I don't watch as much football as I used to, but I can imagine that would be quite annoying.
Yeah, so that's one thing. Gary Neville, stop saying at this moment in time. And he says it, I've seen him interviewed a lot about politics and he says it a lot in that. It's like a little tick he's got that he keeps saying, and now I've noticed it every time I hear it. So just stop saying that, Gary. Just stop it. So that annoys me. Something else I've noticed, and again, I wonder whether this is a thing that people are told by their bosses. Whenever I watch BBC News, I don't know if other news channels do it. I tend to watch BBC News more than the others. But I've noticed this thing that certainly two or three of the presenters do. So I think it's like a thing they're told. So they're doing the news and they'll say, now let's talk to our correspondent in Kyiv. And they'll go over to Clive Myrie, who might be in Kyiv. I'm not saying that they go to Clive Myrie for his section of the news. This is just when they go to him for like a 2 minute to and fro about what's happening. So you might have Hugh Edwards in the studio, right? Yeah. And he'll go, so let's go across to our correspondent, Clive Myrie in Kyiv. Clive, tell us the latest. And there'll be one question and there may be a second question. There's normally two questions. So the second question will be, so what do you feel the Russians might do next, Clive? And Clive will go, oh, I think they might reassess their options. And then he'll go back and then Hugh Edwards will go, thank you, Clive. Clive Myrie there in Kiev. I know who he is. He's only been on for about 90 seconds. You told me at the start who he is. You said, thank you, Clive. Why'd you say, Clive Myrie there? Well, I hate that. Oh, it's really starting to annoy me. And they all do it. It's like, why don't you just say, thanks, Clive, or Clive Myrie, thank you. If you need to say his full name again, I can understand if you've introduced him and then half an hour has passed, then fine. But it's just after 2 minutes and they all do it. And that's a little pet peeve that started to annoy me.
I mean, you say little pet peeve. That's a tiny pet peeve. Little infringement there is so small. Oh, most people just let that wash over.
No, but I've started to notice it and I've started to shout at the telly now. But I believe that they're told to do it. So again, I go back to the radio station. When you're told at radio stations, oh, you must say the radio station's name at least once every link. So why? Why do the people know what they're listening to? Like, don't treat people like they're idiots.
Oh, God.
Stop treating them like they're idiots. And I remember asking someone once about this on the radio. They said, it's because if someone's travelling in a car, they might not know what station has come up on their... Yes, like 40, 50 years ago, everyone's got... digital displays on their car now. It'll tell them what radio station they're listening to. It annoys me that
people are
told to do these things.
People aren't, carefully turning a dial anymore to find a radio station. It's all DAB. It's all digital. They just pit up and down and find the station they want. But still, presenters are told, station name, tagline, song, time, weather.
Change it and stop treating the people like idiots. And BBC News, whoever's in charge, because it's clearly something they're told, you've got to say... Clive Myrie there. So don't say that. Just say thanks, Clive.
For the presenter, it's white noise. For the listener, it's white noise.
Well, it's not white noise to me. It's become an irritating noise. So there's another thing that's annoyed me. Little pet peeve.
Oh, the list goes on.
I've got one more I can't... I mean, there's a couple of people I can pinpoint, but something I've started to notice when I watch TV a lot, certain actors or actresses who have this... this weird habit of almost deflating after the end of a line. And it particularly happens in dramas and police dramas.
I imagine it happens in EastEnders quite a lot.
Well, I think there's
a lot of huffing and sighing in EastEnders.
But you get these actors go, I don't know, they might say, well, there's been two murders, sir. Two murders.
That's annoying.
And I've really started to... So what's this weird... breath thing at the end of a line. And once you start noticing that, it's ruined a couple of dramas for me the last week. And I think that's why it's annoyed me.
Well, for the love of God, don't tell us which dramas, otherwise you'll ruin it for everybody.
But there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. I feel it's been quite a ranty podcast this week, but I am in a very ranty mood at the moment, Ben. I feel very wound up, so I'm sorry if this has been quite ranty, but I do feel this is my outlet. This is like my therapy.
No, so, I think it's fine. I've been quite deflated for the last few weeks with COVID, so it's been nice to have a bit of a burst of fury. It's been fun.
Yeah. I don't know if it's been fun to listen to, but I feel better for it.
I do need to lie down.
So as always, we finish with a couple of recommendations for you. I want to recommend ITV drama, The Thief, His Wife and the Canoe. It's the true life story of John and Anne Darwin, who, of course, John faked his death, if you remember that story.
Yes, I do. That was for the life insurance money, wasn't it?
It was. It's a four-part series. It's got Eddie Marsden as John Darwin, who's a terrific actor anyway, and Monica Dolan as Anne Darwin, who's fantastic. And it's just brilliant. It's brilliantly made. I mean, there's nothing new that you learn. You know the story. But
and presumably, if you're recommending it, this isn't one where the acting gets a bit too breathy.
I didn't notice it in this one. No. So there's no...
I just rented a canoe.
So I don't think there's any of it in there. But if there is, you're going to find it annoying if you hear it. I might have missed it. I don't pick it up all the time. So, and there's also a documentary. If you want to watch the documentary about it as well, that's well worth a watch.
Just got off the phone to Direct Line.
Exactly. That's exactly what people are doing. Why? Why are you needing this? I seem to remember Harry Hill once on TV Burp picking out, you said EastEnders. I'm sure it was the guy who plays Phil Mitchell.
Brian McFadden. Oh, yeah. No. He's Steve McFadden.
Brian McFadden was in Westlife or something, wasn't he? Yes, Steve McFadden. I remember, I'm sure Harry Hill pointed this out, that at the end of every line, he deflates. I'm sure he used the word.
It's a funny clip.
So this is the sort of thing to look out for. But I don't remember it in this drama, so that's well worth a watch. And the other thing I want to recommend is a film. It's a bit of a hard watch, this one, Ben.
Okay.
It's called The Bombardment. It's on Netflix, and it's based on a true story, and it's an horrific story. I didn't know anything about this. This was during the Second World War, towards the end of the Second World War, in Copenhagen. And the RAF had agreed with the Danish resistance, who had some of their own people imprisoned at the Gestapo HQ in Copenhagen. But they kind of decided, we might have to sacrifice those people, just get in and bomb the Gestapo HQ. And they had to fly extremely low. But what happened is one of the planes caught something and then crash landed. So when the third wave of attacks came in, there were two plumes of smoke. One was the smoke from the Gestapo HQ, which had been bombed already, and the other one was from this crashed plane. And unfortunately, that had fallen near a school.
Oh dear.
And the school ended up being bombed. And I think 85 children were killed. I think 12 teachers and 16 other adults or something like that. I mean, it's the most horrific tale. As I say, it's a difficult watch, but I can't recommend it enough. It's if you're interested in history and some of the bits of history that you're not told. It was called Operation Carthage, I think, and I'd never heard of this. And sometimes you've got to watch some sort of pretty hard stuff to kind of really get your head around a lot of what went on that we're not always told about.
Well, that's quite a depressing way to end this podcast trip. But
yeah, well, have you got anything to cheer us up?
I've not got anything to cheer us up. Well, as I mentioned last week, the new series of Inside Number 9 has started. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen the first episode. Very, very good, yes.
Very good, and I felt very untraditional, I thought, for Inside Number 9.
Definitely.
If you're a fan of it, not your classic ending, I think.
Well, they say that on their own podcast. They say it's not your classic episode. It's much more character-led episode rather than story so much.
Yes, I won't say anything to spoil anything, of course, because sadly, I think I saw Rhys Shearsmith talking on Twitter saying that there's been a few reviews popping up, people who've been privy to sort of getting a forward look at the episodes, and they've basically spoiled all of them.
Oh, come on, people.
So just to reiterate, there will be no spoilers here, but don't bother trying to look any of the episodes up. Just watch them and enjoy them.
I think the one thing we can say is that Mark Gatiss is in it, so it's nice to see sort of the three League of Gentlemen back together.
Yes, and Diane Morgan.
Who is
always fantastic. She was nothing to do with League of Gentlemen, but she's always brilliant. And also I've noticed the return of the Adam Buxton podcast with little Alex Horn.
Oh, well, that's going to be great, isn't it?
Yes. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm sure that will not disappoint.
So if this podcast has got you riled or wound up or just depressed, go to that next.
Yeah, and then watch Inside Number 9 and then listen to their podcast. But please remember to come back to us.
There are ways out of this. I think I should tell people, just as we wrap up, that this hasn't been an easy episode to record.
No.
My inability to talk this week has been quite difficult.
It's been unique because it has been difficult, but for once, it's not been my fault, which is lovely.
So what I can tell you is this has been a hell of an edit job, and hopefully it's come together all right. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime, Ratchevenbin on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.